for? What were they? Stacy instantly asked, striking a pose. There was no point keeping anything from her, so I confidently declaimed the verses I just heard.
Got it. Okay, let's get back to our current cares. What are we going to do about tomorrow's attack?
Asked Stacy, lying down on her back beside me. Despite my energy having been restored, I had no strength to get up and do anything, nor any desire for that matter.
Should we call it off?
As if. Tomorrow we make an assault on Altamita. We attack at 6:30 p.m., and no one will stand in our way, not even Phoenix. Mulling things over a bit, I got out my amulet and called Leidy.
Listening,
the warrior greeted me.
Leidy, I've got a new assignment for you. Make an announcement that tomorrow, at 6:30 p.m., the Legends of Barleona will do battle against Phoenix and the Azure Dragons. Anyone who wants to join us should notify you and Barcina. We'll assemble ourselves at 5:30 in the central square. Then we'll pop open a portal and step into the fray.
I'll get on it,
Leidy replied with some surprise.
Is Stacy aware of this?
I'm aware, the girl replied. Write it the way Mayan told you.
So it's like that?
I smiled at the girl as soon as I hung up.
Is Stacy really aware?
You bet. To make a move like that, you'd need brass. Well, you understand me. There aren't many who would dare oppose Phoenix.
You don't know the whole thing. I smirked bitterly and made another call on my amulet.
Speaking,
came Eckler's voice again. Stacy looked at me with astonishment, unable to understand why I would call her father again, so I got down to business.
Greetings again. This is Mayan.
Was there something we overlooked?
Eckler asked, just as surprised as Stacy. Nothing as far as Altamita is concerned, but I have a favor to ask. I'm reckoning on doing battle tomorrow. I'm defending my property, you see, and I need a battle group of 300 players of at least level 200, as per our agreement. By 5:30, they need to be equipped and ready to jump to the coordinates I'll send you later.
Ah, I forgot. I will ask the heralds to make sure that your warriors will perform their duties properly as our agreement stipulates. That is, without any goofing off or deserting. I expect them to perform as they normally would, given their levels.
Despite the fact that in our contract it states that I only need to ask you 30 minutes ahead of time, I decided to ask you well in advance. What if you might have some local conflict of interests? Who knows when it comes to Phoenix after all? And please note that I only need this force to defend my own castle, which was granted me by the Emperor. There's no talk at all of capturing anything.
A nice turn. I didn't expect it, came the answer from the other side of the line. 300 players of that level is a fairly significant force indeed. But it won't be enough to hold the castle.
If we don't manage, no big deal. Please don't worry about your reputation with Narlak. Under our agreement, any negative effects will fall to my clan, so... Well, look, we're in agreement then. Tomorrow, at 5:30... Barcina and Leidy will send you the destination coordinates for the warriors you'll send to defend my castle. Eckler, you understand, naturally, that there's nothing personal here. It's just business. Over and out.
You decided to burn the last bridge with the top clan in Malabar?
Stacy asked with astonishment.
How'd you get a contract like that with Dad?
He owed me, I replied, shrugging, and dialing my amulet yet again. Stacy, we've received a challenge. Either we accept it, or we flee somewhere far and stay there for a long time. I'm getting tired of fleeing lately.
"Hi, Mayan,"
said Evelet, hearing my last words and realizing who was calling him.
"As I understood it, tomorrow's battle can't be avoided?"
"No. Moreover, I need your assistance in one other piece of business. Tell me, how much would you charge me for 3 scrolls of Armageddon and 3 volunteers who'd be prepared to cast them?" Chapter 10 Storming the Castle.
"Dan, do you have a moment?"
"I'm completely free until 6, I said, and looked quizzically at Stacy, who was lying beside me. The proper thing to do was to gather my strength and explore Big Eye's cave. There were probably some interesting items in it. And yet, after my negotiations over the amulet, I felt a bit exhausted. Evelet could only scrounge up a single scroll of Armageddon, and he wanted 7 million gold for it, to recoup the costs of the magic he'd sunk in it.
"Why, what's up?"
"I wanted to go over the verses we received. Have you noticed anything odd about them?"
"Okay, here, I'm sending you a scroll. Go back to your logs and copy out the 8 orc verses you received, but make sure to copy them exactly as they are in your journal. You never sent them to me anyway. After that, I'll show you something I noticed about the verses I have."
Unfolding the paper, I read over the 12 verses on it, including the 4 ogre ones we'd just received. None of it made much sense, so, digging around in my journal, I copied over the 8 missing verses and returned the whole scroll to Stacy.
"Excellent. Let's look at what we have,"
said Stacy, unfolding the sheet of paper and rubbing her hands in anticipation of something extraordinary. The day when the sky was covered with darkness and great hailstones rained down, the great creator of things realized that his hour had come, and because he could not die, he departed to his rest, having sealed the doors to himself forever, disturbed by no one to be. In a cave, he enshrined all he knew, possessed, and created, and the one who finds the way to him shall be blessed. By the tandem of gods, Carmandont found the way. Born of a servant, an emperor he became in the midst of the shining mountains, and the day when the world knew that a great one had come. Near the river, each day in whose waters there meet, Durin, exalted by 100 creators of human souls, forever proclaiming love and prosperity, and Orin, her twin brother, who spent his whole life in creating unique living plants which covered the world with their beauty, rests a man whose fate's inextricably linked to the world which was left by the dragons forever, birthing and nurturing the fire like a virtual mother, the source of danger, evil, doubt, and fear. Your way lies through 5 warrior giants, the only one who craves a quaff of brackish waters.
What do you think?
It ain't Shakespeare, I quipped.
Uh-huh. Notice the strange capitalization of some words? Who capitalizes enshrined or inextricably? Most tellingly, why spell covered without the first letter? Now, spell out all the uppercase letters that are neither at the beginning of a line nor at the beginning of a proper noun.
T-H-R-E-E-O-N-E.
No way! 3, 1, 3, 2, 4. 6 of the 8 numbers from the x-coordinate in the coordinate grid. Without even knowing the last 2 numbers, we can assume the general region where we need to search for the cave. Look on the map.
Opening the map and charting a virtual line, I couldn't help but swear a little. Almost the entire length of my red line was occluded by fog, a part of Barleona I hadn't yet explored.
Okay, don't swear so. Here, I'm sending you a present for Valentine's Day. You're not the only one who knows how to give gifts. You have received a portion of the map of Malabar and the Freelands. Do you wish to load it?
A portion of the map? Sure, I'll load it. It can't hurt.
Map of Malabar and the Freelands updated. Area of Malabar currently explored, 87%. Area of the Freelands currently explored, 32%. What do you think of my present?
Stacy asked coquettishly, and burst out laughing, seeing my reaction. I have to admit, my face must have looked pretty funny indeed. I was in an utter stupor. What the girl had just sent me could fetch 20 to 30 million gold at auction. And considering how quickly Stacy had sent me the map, she hadn't even bothered to cut anything out.
A single request. Please delete the areas marked as Phoenix Zone right away. You won't be allowed in anyway, and it wouldn't be good at all if this info got out. But okay, go ahead and open the map. You can figure out what you want to delete and keep later on. Dan, stop stuttering. You've had full access to my map forever now. You could have made a copy a long time ago. Better, tell me, why did you restrict me from copying the Cartossian part of your map?
I had an agreement with Evelyn, I droned, trying to come to my senses. There's an excellent present, there's a perfect one, and there's an imperial one. But I'd have to introduce a whole new category to classify Anastaria's present. An imperial one wouldn't even come close to this.
Got it. I'll go prostrate myself before my uncle. Have you opened the map?
Uh-huh.
Look, the last 2 coordinates give us a margin of error of about 300 meters, so we can ignore them for the moment. It's clear from the first 8 verses that we should be looking in the mountains. This meridian intersects only one mountain range, Elma, the mountain range stretching from the deepest south of the continent right to the extreme north. In the morning, its peaks sparkle like lanterns.
The river, as you and I already discovered, is called the Altair.
Correct. Now, the new 4 verses? I'll bet my right hand that they're talking about a volcano. The lava flows past 5 huge peaks, pouring either into the ocean or the Altair River.
I'm not so sure about this, I said after a little thought.
Look, nurturing the fire like a virtual mother.
I agree that this sounds like a volcano, but
tell me, have you ever heard of underground volcanoes?
Ones that do not erupt to the surface?
Maybe you're right. No, definitely. Look, Sintana is also located in Elma. If you are correct, then this eruption is inside the mountain, which the dwarves are afraid of. I'll find out if there's any info about this. In that case, the Dark Waters are neither the ocean nor the Altair River. They're subterranean waters, where there's no light.
All we have to do is craft the other three figurines, obtain the rest of the coordinates, and then we'll be able to travel to the tomb, I said, infected with Stacy's excitement.
The first three numbers of the Y-coordinate won't help us. I can tell them to you right now. 1, 1, and 2. So we will have to find an entrance. Okay. I'm going to find out about the lava, and then we'll give it more thought. We need those giants ASAP.
Uh-huh. All I have to do is find some time to make them. I don't know about you, but I'm going to go look around that cave. No one has ever been here, so maybe I can find something interesting.
I'm with you,
the girl said, jumping to her feet.
We'll pocket the treasure together.
Big Eye's cave was not so big. A step here, a few steps there, and several skips across. And there was such an evident absence of eye-pleasing treasure chests brimming with loot that it seemed like the boss decided to mock the players who had passed all the obstacles. Us, that is.
Nothing,
Anastaria said sadly, activating a curious amulet she had that would identify hidden treasure.
Neither gold nor items. Nothing but a barren cave.
That's impossible, Stacy.
Well, this amulet of true sight reveals all hidden passages, vaults, and troves, yet it's showing nothing here at all.
Maybe there's some drawing on the walls, or on the floor?
I asked, refusing to accept the demise of all my hopes in reanimating my internal menagerie,
which, following the outcome of the dragon's dungeon, had fallen into a deep coma. My poor hoarding hamster still refused to come to terms with his failure to get his little paws on the items the devs had shown me. And though Greed Toad croaked with satisfaction from her acquisition of Borg's Gladiator, she did so a bit too quietly and uncertainly, almost automatically and out of habit. The menagerie had fallen into a coma and needed to be reanimated.
Still nothing,
the girl replied a minute later, having carefully examined all the surfaces by torchlight.
Any other suggestions?
I pass. It looks like the reward here are the verses that the player receives. No doubt someone decided that no material item can compare to such artistic largesse.
It's too bad you weren't recording. What if Big Eye displayed some symbols as he was reading the poem?
I was recording, but I've already watched the video and there's nothing in it but his voice and a bunch of swamp slime. After all, he dipped me up to my ears in the water.
Wait!
I stopped in my tracks. Big Eye had not recited the verses in the same voice that he'd used to demand the key. And earlier, both the orcs and the dwarves had appeared with the verses.
So why hadn't the two little ogres shown up this time around?
The devs decided not to introduce the kids? I mean, like it or not, they had been worked into the lore by the plague of the dragons, and, well...
I took out the figurines from my bag and placed them on the ground. There were no changes, either to their properties or to their appearance. However, I felt that I was moving in the right direction. And so, the key to the boss was the recitation from Venus and Adonis, but that only governed the relationship between the player and the item. What had to be done to activate the relationship between an item and an NPC? Dan?
Stacy grew curious when I sat down beside the figurines and began to meditate on what I needed to do. Verses? Won't work. A fairy tale? Won't work. A nursery rhyme? No. Maybe I should ask someone who would definitely know? Well, why not?
Our greetings to you, brother.
Unlike my earlier visits to the astral plane, this time the supreme spirits of both worlds initiated the conversation on their own.
We are watching over your progress and wish to warn you that you should not let your reason cloud your feelings. Be careful with Ultimida.
Careful? Is something amiss with it?
Knowledge only strengthens reason. Trust your senses and follow the way of the shaman,
replied the supreme spirits, without any ambiguity, and with plentiful citations to various regulatory documents that would clarify any forthcoming events. I wish they hadn't said anything at all.
You are not yet ready to undergo your trial. Once your water spirits reach level 10, we will summon you ourselves.
I bow my head before the wisdom of the Supreme Ones, I began, mentally underscoring the need to level up my spirits as quickly as possible. I'd have to redouble my efforts.
But I need assistance. How may I summon the essences imprisoned in the Carmandant chess set?
There are no essences inside the chess set. The chess set is but a key. If you seek those whom the chess pieces symbolize, you must renounce all self-imposed limitations.
Dan, can we make a deal that you'll warn me before you vanish who knows where?
Anastaria rebuked me as soon as the supreme spirits had kicked me, like some errant kitten, from the astral plane. For crying out loud, I'm almost a harbinger already, and they still treat me like this.
Even telepathy didn't work. You may not summon your other half when it is in the astral plane,
added Anastaria in a cartoon voice that was at once metallic and whiny. Sorry. I simply have this huge suspicion that, well, we need to find a way to summon the essences of these two ogres. And I believe it's best if we do this right here. That's why I went to the astral plane. I was looking for advice. But, I guess I should be careful what I ask for.
Why? What did they say?
That the dark forest and the dilemma it posed was a lovely flower compared to Ultimida. Back then, the Supremes didn't even bother to warn me of any trouble, and yet now they spelled it out. Follow the way of the shaman.
The way of the shaman?
Anastaria was thinking of questions faster than I could answer them. If I only knew. According to the Supremes, I'm following it. How and why remain a giant puzzle, as far as I'm concerned. I have several thoughts, but they are all connected with working at the level of premonition. And the problem there is that once you hit level 100, a portion of your feelings are generated by the system in order to confuse the player. So basically, I don't know what I have to do. What's clear is that we can't leave here yet.
You need the essences of these two ogres, and you don't know how to summon them, right?
Stacy clarified once more. Yeah. If they were spirits, I could probably summon them, but sentient essences are something else.
Let me try. Only I won't promise that it'll work,
the girl said enigmatically, and her singing filled the cave. Stacy was trying to summon her goddess. As I recall,
She had only managed to accomplish this once before, despite the fact that every manual out there said that paladins had no such powers. Once, though, Stacy had surpassed herself, becoming a lieutenant in the process, so why not try it one more time? The only thing I was wary of was, if Iluna really did deign to appear, what if she became enraged that Stacy had dared summon her over such an insignificant affair?
"Hello, my daughter."
A pleasant waft of wind embraced us from all sides at once, instantly dispersing the bog stench that we'd already gotten used to.
"You have summoned me?"
"Yes, O Mother,"
said Anastaria, bowing her head. I was doing my best to avert my gaze, knowing that once I saw the goddess's face up close, any other girl, even Anastaria, would seem completely ordinary. Why tempt myself unnecessarily?
"My spouse and I require your help."
"I know what you need,"
said Iluna pensively, and I noticed blades of grass squeezing forth from beneath the rocks. Even deep beneath the swamp, nature reveled in its proximity to the highest light.
"But alas, I cannot help you. Those whose essences enchant the Commandant chess set have forever departed the cycle of rebirth. Neither I nor Tartarus have them.
Then forgive me for summoning you over such a trifle, Mother."
Stacy bowed her head even further, as impossible as it seemed.
"You did the right thing, my daughter, in acting against the rules. I had already begun to consider how I could contact you and your spouse when you summoned me. Your call came at the right moment, so I have no reason to be displeased with you. To the opposite, I will take you with me right this instant to my chambers so that you may continue your training. My paladins have long since been in need of a captain, and you have proven that the duties of a lieutenant are too light for you."
"Mayan, is there something about my sandals I should know?"
"Dan, I've been granted a quest. Unique, class-based. It'll take up to 2 weeks, and allows me to sign out to reality once a day for 3 hours."
"Dan!"
Stacy did not speak the last word so much as cried it. On the one hand, this was a personal invitation from the goddess. On the other hand, there was a battle tomorrow, and the girl understood very well what her absence would mean. There will be many other battles, whereas a chance like this, I say you should take it. I would have been an utter jerk to even ask Stacy to reconsider. It was not so much my reputation with the goddess that was in question here, as my reputation with the girl herself. "Forgive me, Iluna. I do not dare look at you." In my attempt to conceal my bitterness at the realization of tomorrow's failure, I suddenly began to gush with sincerity. "I am married to the loveliest woman in this world, and I do not want to test myself unnecessarily by unwittingly comparing her to you. I'm not made of steel. Plus, you have very nice sandals. I've never seen any like them in Barleona."
"You are the same old shaman, I see."
Divine laughter filled the cave. Dust began to fall from the ceiling, illuminating the bare rocky walls of the cavern with a soft light. A quick glance at the properties of this odd dust forced me to do a double take. Divine pollen, a unique ingredient for all professions, which could replace absolutely any ingredient in the game. Even if Stacy ends up leaving right now,
I know exactly what I'll be doing for the next few hours, crawling around the cave on my knees, a flask in hand.
I have very little time, so I will tell you just one thing. Say no to Altamida.
Why? The question burst forth on its own accord, even though I already knew the answer.
Even I cannot tell you. Doing so would tear the fabric of the world itself.
Practically word for word. I wonder, did the developers calculate my psychological type and were now spurring me in their desired direction? The Supremes tell me that I should follow the way of the shaman. Iluna tells me to leave the castle alone. Why? What is it about Urasai that the goddess herself has descended to give us this warning? And take Stacy out of the equation for a few weeks. Iluna knows very well that I won't dare go to the castle without the girl. Even with Gera's boys, there's nothing for me to do in the castle on my own, and I'm not wealthy enough to hire any mercenaries. Forgive me, O goddess, but I cannot do that. Altamida will either be destroyed or become mine.
In that case, the goddess said sadly, heed the advice of your supreme spirits. Do not stray from the way of the shaman.
With these words, Iluna and Anastaria both vanished. Stacy? I reached out telepathically, but immediately received a system reply.
You may not summon your other half when she is in the chambers of the god.
I see. Stacy is in God's chambers? That is, the goddess's chambers? If she doesn't let me watch the video in a week, I'll gobble her up, inventory bag and all. What is this way of the shaman, anyway? Granting myself a whole 20 seconds for self-castigation and contemplation of the eternal question of what do, I got down on all fours and began to collect the divine pollen. Suffering may be enjoyable sometimes, but it's seldom profitable. Having filled my 12th and final flask with the priceless ingredient, I sat down across from the ogre figurines and began to think. It's odd. Only a few months had passed since the clan's founding, and I had already forgotten all about raiding dungeons, collecting and distributing loot, or any attempts of leveling up my profession or stats. I'd even put the jewel-crafting business aside, the ogres and our amulets notwithstanding. Those were more presents from the developers than my own invention. It had been a long while since I had done anything on my own to be proud of. Again and again, I found that there simply wasn't any time for it. I simply couldn't sink several days into my crafting. At the moment, I was turning from an ordinary player, which I liked being, to some kind of Ekiler or Undigget. Leading a clan demanded constant and tireless management of my players, forgetting all about my own character. All I saw anymore when I shut my eyes were Leides reports, and he, by the way, was surprising me greatly. Over the past 2 weeks, the clan had started making steady progress across all indicators. We were making a clean 1.5 million profit every week. Even if this is just the beginning, I still liked the fact that our fledgling clan had taken a positive financial path. A message from Magdi popped up in the clan chat. The raiding party had reached the last boss of the third dungeon.
The hunter wanted to know if I wanted to join them. It's like he had read my mind. I had to refuse him, however, despite my sudden urge to level up. The bloody scythe boss had earned me almost a level. All I lacked was another 10% to reach my next moment of joy. But, yet again, there wasn't any time. Nor did I want to leave this place, since I still held out hope of finding my reward. There simply must be one somewhere in this cavern. What else was bothering me? Ah, it's already been several days since I last summoned Draco. I haven't had the time for him either. Well, what's keeping me from summoning him now? What's up? Come over. We'll hang out. Coming! Oh, boy, what a place! You know how to swim? Asked my level 54 totem after appearing in the cavern and flying several circles over the water. No, the siren helped me reach this place. You're still in cahoots with the foe? What foe? How is she a foe? Here, let me tell you what's been going on. I did this one thing. Forcing Draco to land beside me, I sat down on the ground and, reclining against him, began to relate another fairy tale. One about princesses, dragons, the yin-yang stone, and the unearthly love of two hearts. I also made sure to remind Draco that it was none other than he who had stood up to his own kin to protect us from their attack.
Cool. So then she's not the enemy, but your wife? I would have never imagined that. Hang on. Since you were in Viltorax, did you ask Dad about our race's history?
No. Stacy and I tied the knot and then were immediately thrown back into Barleona. I didn't even get a word in edgewise.
Too bad. The thought that the dragons were the scourge of the world is still bothering me. We couldn't have...
We'll figure it out. You just make sure to stick around.
Where would I go? Hey, why'd you throw the ogre figurines on the ground?
I wanted to summon their essences, but it turned out that the essences aren't in the figurines, nor in the divine chambers, nor with the spirits. Where they're hanging out remains an enormous question.
Achoo!
Draco sneezed as naturally as if he were a real living creature, and asked a bit sheepishly,
"Say, do you mind if I go now? The stench and humidity here is tickling my nostrils. How can you bear this smell anyway?"
"Go on." I released my totem, glancing at Draco's properties with some surprise. Although I had spent an entire half hour telling him the fairy tale, my totem's level had not grown even a tiny fraction as I had expected it to. Will someone finally explain to me the way this leveling is supposed to work?
Thanks.
Draco licked my cheek, which he had never done before, and, before disappearing, added mysteriously,
Brother, I just can't understand one thing. If you need the ogre's essences, why try to summon them? They're always with you, after all.
Draco vanished, leaving me cursing from befuddlement. How many more of these riddles would I have to solve? Instead of outlining some logical course of action, everyone I came across insisted on dropping hints. I should make a sign and nail it to my back so that it could stick over my head. Then I could write on it, "I don't understand hints. Speak plainly, please." I didn't bother to summon Draco to explain himself. and instead sat down in front of the figurines again. The Supremes had told me to forget my limitations. Draco told me the essences were right here. Forget my limitations. That's easy enough to say, but doing it. Suddenly vibrating, the amulet jolted me from my hypnosis session with the figurines.
"Boy, man, we've got some business,"
said Plinto's dreadfully enigmatic voice. As a rule, the rogue preferred to resolve his questions through the clan chat, so there must have been a hefty reason for his call now. And I even knew what it was. "Let me guess," I blurted out, unable to restrain my emotions. "The Patriarch just showed up at your location and offered you a chance to earn some epic title among the vampires, like, for instance, the all-sucking bloodsucker?"
"The title's a little different, but you've gotten the gist of it right. He wants to take me for a few weeks, but considering the battle tomorrow..."
Hold on and hang on. Both Stacy and I had our classes changed, not our race. Are you changing as a rogue?
"No, as a vampire. I hit the rogue ceiling a long, long time ago, when I became Master of Stealth. This time, the offer is to develop in my race."
What's going to be your new title, then?
"The Patriarch said that he'd make me an adept. After that comes cleric, bishop, and, the last step, patriarch. It turns out that I'll be able to teleport anywhere in the continent once I reach that. As for higher vampire, that's only the first level. The weakest one."
"That progression reminds me of priests somehow," I muttered, hearing these familiar terms.
"Not quite, but maybe you're on to something. So, what do you say? I'm looking at two buttons at the moment. The Patriarch is right here tapping his foot. I need to make a decision."
2 weeks?
1.5, maybe less."
"All right, just don't hurt yourself," I said, in a voice stripped of all emotion. No more Plinto. All that remained was to wait for Cornick or Renox to call me, and that would be the end of tomorrow's venture.
"Dan, can you still hear me?"
Plinto had not yet hung up, and the Patriarch's voice now addressed me. "A bit," I answered the vampire, once more realizing that he was about to advise me to abandon Altamita.
"Wonderful. Make sure to heed this advice, then. Even in your dragon form, you won't be able to fly into Altamita. The castle is under a very special curse. I myself helped the Dark Lord conjure it. So make sure to adjust your plans if they include even a single thought of flying. Next, the castle gates are made of imperial oak, whole. As you understand, breaking them is unrealistic. It'll be easier to pull down the walls. In fact, all the wooden items inside Altamita are made from this type of wood. Stairs, doors, etc. And finally, before attacking, figure out why the castle left the Freelands. Personally, as one of the authors of the castle's curse, I have no idea what it is. We made sure to include a restriction that limited the castle to the free lands where there aren't any sentients. Right before it teleports to a new location, the castle is supposed to take into account the current boundaries of the Empire. So it could not have made a mistake.
Neither I nor the former Dark Lord ever included anything in the curse that could cause such an error to occur. Something has gone wrong, but it's not clear what. There are no traps inside the castle, so you may move about freely. But remember, the phantoms can pass freely through the room's walls, floors, and ceilings. The castle's walls are enchanted, so they can only leave the castle through the gates. But inside, the phantoms are free to move as they wish. Be careful. To dispel the curse, you must destroy the crown of the Cursed One, which is worn by the shame of the past, a now nameless earl. That is all that I know about Altamira. Good luck to you, shaman.
Finally, someone of the higher authorities has deigned to say something about Altamira that didn't involve Amir. Don't bother, you'll die. Now, in addition to a frontal assault to demonstrate to Undigget that I don't intend on reneging on my words, and which will commence tomorrow in either case, I will have to arrange an interesting visit to the barbarians to find out exactly why they had fled their ancestral lands. Design mode greeted me with its customary dimness. A further half hour of dances and hypnosis sessions with the figurines had yielded nothing, and Draco, whom I tried to summon to explain what he had meant, simply thumped his tail and insisted that the figurines' essences were always already with me, and that he couldn't explain this, and also that it stank here and he had to go because Mom and Dad were calling him to dinner. The ungrateful reptile. Family. So, at this point, design mode was the last opportunity to get at the logic of what was going on. At the moment, I was even prepared to skip tomorrow's battle if I'd suddenly go catatonic in the process of creation, as long as I managed to attain my overdue reward. The developers simply could not have overlooked it. Could not, and period. The two little ogres, Rorg and Grogza, appeared in the middle of the workspace, glimmering with the unique marker. I could not recreate these items. Unique. Impossible to recreate. Once again, unique items that could not be recreated. My thoughts kept grazing something, but could not latch on, like a fish flirting with a hook, failing to take on their conscious form. I felt that I was on the right path, but some detail was missing. Was missing. Right! The item essence ability, which I had buried in the furthest corner of design mode, reckoning it a useless and uninteresting tool, again appeared before my eyes. Item essence. You can now feel the essence of a thing irrespective of its appearance. Attention. This ability does not enable you to feel the essence of things concealed by spells of hidden essence level 100 and higher. Ability level is determined by your current level. What a fool I am! The ability that I had acquired at the very outset of my career as a shaman had, at first glance, offered little or nothing. How would I benefit from knowing the properties of, say, a rock? Was this really a rock, or some secret piece of a wall? What the developers had put in it is what it would be, but only from the perspective of an ordinary player. Now, if we look at the same rock from a different vantage point, then suddenly we see an enormous wall of rocks. And, moreover, some of these rocks flat out refuse to be part of a wall,
so that if I apply another shamanic ability, transformation of essence, and turn the rock's essences into water, for instance, then the wall before me will fall down on its own. Where was my brain this entire time? As a shaman, I have this enormous power, and I don't even use it. I glanced at the description of the second ability associated with the essences. Transformation of essence. You are able to change the essence of a thing. Attention! This ability only works with inanimate objects and does not permit a change of essence in objects protected with Essence Shield level 100 or higher. The level of the object whose essence can be changed depends on your current level.
Opening my eyes upon leaving design mode, I already knew what had to be done. First of all, entering the spirit summoning mode, I located both abilities and equipped them in my active slots. From now on, I would be able to access them whenever I liked, not merely in design mode. Adding a spirit of strengthening to the ability, I was about to return to the chess pieces when another idea illuminated the potholes in my way, and I couldn't help but cry in a fit of inhuman sorrow.
Why is everything so crappy?
The world around me did not bother to answer me, so I tried to calm down and reason things through methodically. It had just occurred to me that there is an enormous aspect of my class that I never use. Obsessed with the notion that shamans only summon spirits and use them for various ends, I had completely ignored all other specifics of my class. No doubt, besides working with the essence of an item, there is a whole ocean of various shields, auras, buffs, and debuffs. Shamans, I bet, can even converse with trees. But I had never considered this. The shamanic book mentions that we are spiritual mentors. Our goal is to ensure a balance in the world, arrange harmony in the internal and external worlds. Only now did I begin to understand that to arrange this very harmony requires a skill for working with essences that I still didn't have, and never will have if I go on worrying only about my clan, as I have been. It's decided, then. Once I'm done with Altamita, I'll focus entirely on myself. I'll throw it all away and go wander Barleona with Draco. I need to figure out who I am, a shaman or a passerby. The ogre figurines went on staring at me like a madman, as if they couldn't understand why they were still out here amid the rocks and not tucked away in their cozy bag. But before divining their essence, I decided to take a fatal shot in my head.
Attention! The summoning of the air communication spirit cannot be interrupted. Because this type of spirit is beyond your rank, each minute your hit points will be reduced by 5%.
Apprentice? Do you really require the assistance of this senile goblin?
Cornick's wry voice sounded in my mind.
I have a couple questions, O teacher, I replied, echoing his tone.
Tell me, please, what is your spirit rank?
Silence. Two painful blows struck me, increasing my endurance by 1% per blow, but I continued to stubbornly await an answer. The link had not been broken, I could feel it, and yet Cornick remained silent. No big deal. I can wait.
Too much hangs on this at the moment.
At last came the pensive response.
You're the first.
Thank you, teacher. Now I understand everything.
When you get the opportunity, pay me a visit,
added the harbinger, and terminated the link between us. I used to wonder how he, Guernica, and Calatea managed to end my calls, but now I understood that there was nothing mysterious about it at all. It was an ability like any other. For them, a call was not some play with spirits, but a simple mechanic of their class.
Quest received. The path of the shaman, step 4, study. Description, speak with Kornik. Quest type, class-based.
Okay. If the expression, brevity is the soul of wit, is accurate, then the author of this quest may as well be a genius. Why explain things when you could simply send the player to his teacher? There'll be explanations aplenty there. By the way, here's a quest that should keep me from the battle tomorrow. Not. Barca, how's the recruitment drive? I called the druid.
Like I said, not many people want to fight for free. According to my imitator, so far, 7,340 players have RSVP'd. Let's see what tomorrow brings.
7.5? Why, that's excellent.
Not exactly. It's mostly players between level 100 and 150, rarely levels 150 to 200, and there's not a single one above level 200. This'll all be dog meat, as far as Phoenix is concerned.
Even dog meat sometimes bites back. Just remember Crispa. That worked out fine for us. Over and out. Replacing the amulet in my bag, I selected the 2 ogre figurines and activated the Essence of Item ability. It was time to meet the children. Yet no sooner had I activated the ability than everything around me went dark. A location loading bar appeared before me, which I had only seen once before in Barleona, before I had been booted out into reality. Accordingly, all my innards tightened up. Was this another crash? Last time I had a portal, but this time I had nothing of the kind. Why the loading screen? The progress bar reached 100%, and I was mentally preparing myself to wake up and behold my capsule lid, when instead I found myself in a small square room with gray walls and neither a door nor windows. I was sitting at a simple metal table, on the other side of which sat my host, a wholly unexceptional man without any kind of distinguishing marks. He could as well have been a mannequin. "Hello, Daniel," he said in a glib, lively voice that in no way matched his appearance. "I will say right off that you have not violated any laws, and your teleportation to the project area has been effected by the corporation on its own initiative and with the permission of the juvenile authorities. My name is James, and I am responsible for the recent mess that has been happening on our continent."
Mess?
"The launch of Cardus, the creation of a third empire, the Volstor cataclysm, the forthcoming... Well, never mind that. I am also responsible for your chess pieces, which in the end have been handed over to my management. In general, all of the new updates to Barleona are going through me. Fear and tremble before me, O lowly mortal."
"Oh, I know now who Guernica was based off," I smiled in response.
"Excellent. I expected no less. Now, my boys are reporting that everything is ready, so we are prepared to send you back. Of course, we could have simply turned off your consciousness for several minutes, but I wish to make your acquaintance."
"Turn off my consciousness?" I knew you would latch on to that. James pursed his lips. But still...
Generally speaking, each time a player begins to make trouble in the area that I'm in charge of, we have a specially trained imitator watch over him. When the player finally formulates his thought and tries to realize it, we enter the world and do our best to introduce this item to the world. Ordinary players are incapable of creating an item until they've obtained a license from the Master's Guild. Players like you, who are more or less behind bars, simply switch off temporarily, or go to sleep, as we like to call it. No, let's call it dream. That's more accurate. When you wake up, we have already devised a history for the item, its place in Barleona, and its role in the current lore. We also draft a license for it. That's why you never had to go anywhere to do that. And, by the way, you owe me a drink for all that. That was my work.
I don't even know how to express the gratitude I feel for such benevolence, I muttered in reply.
Ah,
the man waved his hand.
We'll call it even. And so, you see, I wasn't in charge of the chess set initially, and unfortunately, there are some bugs with it. Part of the functionality is entirely handed over to the player. We can't make changes to the current scenario anymore, otherwise we'll have continuity issues down the line. And yet, you're currently trying to do what we never anticipated. You're trying to communicate with the figurines. Somehow, that possibility wasn't considered when the chess set was being created. It's simply not possible at the moment, even though all the imitators around you do nothing but push you to try. I mean, the whole thing is such a tangle of algorithms that good luck figuring it out later. Well, my people have applied the patch by now and adjusted the story. There's nothing too complicated here to fix. So now the essences will be accessible to you, and you can go ahead and speak with them all you want. As I said, we could have done all this without bringing you here, but I couldn't refrain from asking you, how do you like Altamita?
You too? About that? I exclaimed. How much of this can there be? You've cooked up God knows what, and now you're asking me how I feel about it? Well, I like it just fine. What's my opinion to you, anyway?
What do you mean, to me? Altamita is my creation, and I'm curious to speak to my chief lab rat, especially when the opportunity has presented itself so naturally. Beta testing doesn't paint the whole picture, and the things that have been happening at the moment? Do you want I share some strategically vital info with you?
Will it drastically change my understanding of the meaning of life, the universe, etc.?
Bingo!
All right. Seems like lately everyone's trying to astonish me. Here's your chance.
The more players there are fighting outside of Altamita, the stronger the Phantoms will be. We've launched an experimental type of mob who know how to level up on their own. Each Phantom gains as much experience as hit points lost by players located in a radius of 500 meters from the castle. And it doesn't matter whether the Phantoms killed them or not, or if the players killed each other. The Phantoms get the XP either way. A curious property, don't you think? You've got a slaughter scheduled tomorrow at the walls of Altamita, so... Well, anyway, I'm told that we've reset the system and adjusted the lore, so it's time for you to be getting back. Oh, I forgot the most important thing. Thank you. I've made so much money betting on your adventures that I can't find any action anymore. They say that I'm conspiring with you. Ha! I don't even need to conspire with you. You're better than a random number generator. Good luck.
Darkness again with the loading bar, returning me, in the end, to the swamp. Draco was right. It really does reek here.
Acquired item. Rocking chair. Description. Fashioned from the stoutest imperial oak, this rocking chair will serve you well as you while away the long winter evenings sitting before the fire and reliving your past exploits. Item class, unique. Restriction, player must be aristocracy.
Following the update, summoning the little ogres turned out to be a cinch. The devs had built a button right into the chess pieces. Summon essence. They didn't bother to tool around with unnecessary, cryptic algorithms. The two kids showed up, recited the same exact verses as the boss, and dissolved into thin air, leaving me with this rocking chair. Summoning the ogres, orcs, and dwarves again didn't earn me any extra chairs, so either Stacy or I will have to remain standing. I completely agree. The chair was indeed very comfortable, pleasant to the touch, and fit snugly in my bag. But yet, give me a break! A chair! What was I going to do with it? I'm particularly fond of the description. Reliving your past exploits? Is that to say that I'd be spared any new ones henceforth? Bunch of clowns, those guys.
Man, we'll need more teleport scrolls, Marcina announced the good news. Otherwise, it'll take us several days to send everyone to Altamita. 10,373 players from Malabar. Evelyn sent a garbled message, but as I understand it, and these are rough numbers, he has another 7,000 coming. One or two portals won't be enough. We need at least 10, and 20 would be optimal. Let's get Leidy on it.
How much does one scroll cost us?
7,000.
Mooring ain't cheap, is it? All right, I'm approving the purchase of extra scrolls. When do we jump?
I decided to begin it right away. The bulk of our forces will show up at the advertised time, and then we'll have a jam on our hands. Has Magdi already shared with you everything he thinks about the coming battle?
Yep, I nodded, recalling my morning conversation with the hunter. Actually, it was less a conversation and more a monologue recited by my raid leader. And, if you censored all the bad words in it, all it'd be was him standing there, staring at me, and every once in a while uttering exclamations and conjunctions. If I were to paraphrase his gist, he very much wanted to know whether I understood the difficulties involved in managing 10,000 players. But what organization, what management, what leadership? All it was a dumb mass of meat animated by the single desire to momentarily appear in a movie. No one had any doubts that the corporation would be filming our attack. The suits would never let such a massive battle pass unrecorded. So, in the end, after much cussing, Magdi asked me to sign a contract with all the players that they wouldn't attack any other players until either he or I gave the order. I had no choice but to accommodate him.
Then, Barca went on, let me add on a personal note that, man, this is dumb. Picking a fight with the top two clans of the continent, and, as I hear, the heirs will be helping the Azures as well, so, in effect, with the three top clans of the continent, is not a very intelligent idea. The mercenaries are just mercenaries. They show up, fight a bit, and then go their way. It's we who will have to deal with the consequences.
Barca, I understand all of this perfectly well. But, as the head of the clan, I have made my decision.
By the scrolls. In 5 hours, we have to be at Altamita. The evening of the battle turned out surprisingly clear and sunny. The sun shone gently, giving no hint that it was even considering setting for the night. Butterflies flitted from flower to flower. A pair of rabbits darted between two trees, utterly oblivious to any possible danger. That is, the four armies that had assembled in the environs of Altamita. On the one side stood the guards and a host of warriors from the top clans, while facing them stood players from all over Malabar and Cartus, along with 300 warriors from Phoenix. 20,000 against 17,000. The numbers were not in my favor, to put it mildly, but what can you do? Use what you have. Otherwise, what's the point of having started this whole thing?
"Man, we are ready,"
Magdi called me when we had finished arraying our army. I had decided to place the exit portals 2 kilometers from the castle, beyond the radius of the guards and the defenders, so no one had meddled with our deployment.
"We are ready to go."
"Let's start then, little by little," I agreed, and a message from my raid leader appeared before me.
"Attention, everyone! We are beginning to move. Attack only on my command. Do not stray beyond the markers that I will place before the castle. Otherwise, you'll be attacked by the guards."
Watching 15,000 players set